I got the call. I didn't even understand what they were talking about. And then when I did, I thought, it can't be true. This has, somebody's kidding me. And then when they assured me that it was true and read me my biography, I was really just stunned into silence.
Tell us a little bit about the work you've done at the Gay and Lesbian Advocates.
You know, I started there 25 years ago, and my work has grown as with time, and it's grown because more and more things have become possible. When I started, I focused primarily on employment and public accommodations discrimination. I was on defense a lot in terms of trying to protect people who, you know, dared to mention gay anything in classroom settings and were potentially losing their jobs for it or schools were sued and so on. So I did a lot of defense, but over time, once the employment pieces came to be more accepted that, no, you shouldn't fire somebody because they're simply because they're gay or, you know, abuse your gay customers, we moved more into relationship recognition. And, you know, we take calls from the public, and easily a third of our calls were related to the fact that people had no legal status with one another. They were treated as legal strangers. And, of course, many, many people wanted to marry, and I'd been hearing about that since my first week on the job in 1990. And eventually we filed a case in the state of Vermont with Beth Robinson and Susan Murray, and in 1999 received a ruling that same-sex couples should have access to the same rights and protections as married couples, and it was up to the legislature to decide how to do that. And, you know, we ended up with the nation's first civil union law. And I then filed a case while working at GLAAD on behalf of seven couples in Massachusetts, where we won the first freedom to marry case. And, you know, we've continued to move along in New England, not only winning in court as we also did in Connecticut, but moving into another whole branch of government, the legislature, where we won the first ever legislative victories on marriage in New Hampshire, in Vermont, and in Maine in 2009. We lost at the ballot in Maine in 2009, but then went on to win at the ballot with a direct initiative to the people in 2012, and then won marriage in Rhode Island in 2013.
In changing the law, does changing attitudes have to come first? It would seem 20, 30 years ago, the thought of gay marriage was just impossible, but that attitude changed gradually and rather quickly in some spots.
Absolutely. Attitudes are a huge part of it, because in any social justice movement, you need to be engaged with each branch of government, of course, but also with the all-important court of public opinion, because changes are not secure unless people support them. And so, of course, you know, it was extremely important, and of course how we did this changed over the years, to make sure that people knew who gay people were and who gay people's families were, and that we actually share a lot of common concerns. And in my view, one of the best examples was actually the campaign we had in Maine in 2012, which was all about finding common ground about the importance of family, of marriage, of shoring up people's love and commitment for one another. So absolutely, they've gone hand in hand.
What do you plan to do with the stipend? You will be receiving $625,000 over 5 years. How do you plan to use that money?
You know, I am really busy with work, so I have not really had a chance to think about it. I mean, this whole thing is still sinking in, but I can assure you I am keeping my day job.
It seems now the legal aspect of what you do and what others involved in similar situations do now is shifting slowly from gay and lesbian to transgender. Is that an accurate portrait?
Well, it absolutely is. And that work, the transgender work, has also been going on for a long period of time now. And it's really just recognizing that there are people who are born one biological sex but have a very, very deep sense of themselves as a different gender, and needing to honor that. It's a recognized medical condition, gender identity disorder, and it's really treatable, which is respect the gender that the person believes themselves to be. And it can be addressed in a whole range of ways, from hormones to surgery, and no one way of treating this is required. But it's we've recognized that there are many people who are part of the gay community who are really part of the transgender community. And I think for all of us, there is a sense that people expect you to behave a certain way. If you're a woman, they expect you to marry a man. If you're born a male, they expect you to, you know, behave like a man. But in fact, there's just a lot, it's a lot more complex than that for some people. And if what we really care about is ensuring that everybody has freedoms and opportunities and everybody's contributing what they can in the world, then respecting their sexual orientation and respecting their gender identity makes good sense.